This is The Topic is Trek, episode 86 for Friday, February 26, 2021. Coming up in this episode, can we win the unwinnable? Can we connect the story dots? Can we sit through two more classic animated episodes? All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Jim Henson's Enterprise Babies. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. And that was amazing. Not only was I talking, but I was drinking tea at the same time. It's absolutely, I don't know how, ventriloquists, you know, it's a skill I just automatically have. Hello, everyone. That's a little behind the scenes stuff. Let's get to in front of the scene stuff. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek, and beaming in to join me with a new, making sure he his new signature catchphrase is Mr. Craig Stepp.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
And he'll be trying that again next time. And also
wah, wah.
Coming in to join us from parts unknown out west is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
It's not ventriloquism if you're on an audio podcast wearing a mask.
Well, you know, it's degrees of difficulty. What can I tell you?
That's right.
Well, how have you gentlemen been since last we spoke?
I've been good.
Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Excellent.
How about yourself?
Well, hanging in there as well. I got a haircut, so I'm sure everybody on the podcast can see that just as well as they can see me drinking tea while I'm talking.
Actually, you look 10 pounds lighter.
Thank you. I think I am 10 pounds lighter. You
trimmed the beard too, didn't you?
Been a long, long, you know, isolation here, people. Well, one of the topics we want to get into before we even get to subspace chatter, Craig, I'm going to tap you on some of this. I wanted to talk about a little fund or a little contribution thing that's been set up for a friend of the show, Melissa, and her husband. Can you tell us, walk us through a bit what's going on here, Craig?
Yeah, and there's a little bit more that Melissa can actually offer, but what happened was they live in Texas. They live near Dallas, and her husband were suffering through the cold and the weather that Texas was experiencing recently. And along with everybody else, you know, they had their share of problems with water, electricity, and whatnot. And they had a pipe burst in their upper part of their house, and it flooded their bathroom. And, you know, as you get a lot of water like that, there's other damages that you know about and don't know about. So we are kind of pushing everybody towards, if you wish to help her out, she is a big supporter of the Dog Days of Podcasting. So if you listen to any of those, you may recognize her as the Bathtub Mermaid. And Melissa and her husband are graciously, well, they're accepting donations, if you will. I have a link to the Dog Days of Podcasting website or the page, and the money is a link straight to her PayPal account. So if you wanted to just drop her, toss her a coin, so to speak, feel free to and help her out. The picture that's on there, it does not look good. I know I'd be scrambling trying to figure out where the water cutoff is for the house, but anyway, there's a lot of damage that they're having to work through, and as well as the, my mind's blank. What's the word?
I know. Sounds like,
they're deductible. Oh,
deductible.
Deductible. They're deductible and the other expenses that go along with this. Anyway, go over, you can go to bit.ly.com/helpmermaid, and that will take you right to the page.
Excellent. And as I think I mentioned over on Facebook on our Topic is Trek page, we've also mentioned some of Melissa's stories. She writes articles for various online publications, and we've featured some of her Trek articles in the past. So definitely a Trek person to lend some support to if you are able to. All right. That said, it's time to keep the positivity rolling because we're going to check with Charlie, our friend Charlie X, and we're going to see how we stand with subspace chatter this week. Charlie, all set?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
I thought we were on a roll this time, but apparently not. We will try again.
Charlie, your disappointment.
Maybe we should cut this segment.
No, I'm gonna win Charlie over one of these times. I promise.
What if we just rename it? Then he's out of a job.
Ooh, I like that thinking as well.
Right. Just don't tell him. He might get a little.
That's right. He might wish us into the cornfield, I think, as we talk about later as well. All right. My first story is that the wait is over, and yet the wait is just beginning. And that's because production has commenced on both the second season of Star Trek Picard and the first season of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Picard began filming in California in the middle of February, while Strange New Worlds began production of its inaugural season in Toronto at the end of January. And obviously, we don't have any idea when these shows are going to be coming out. It's just good to know that they're actually in front of the cameras filming things, and we will see these things eventually. As we've discussed in the past, post-production on these series take a long time.
10 years at least.
Yeah. And 10 years. So look for it in 2031 or so. No, that doesn't make any sense. No, we guarantee before then you'll see these things, but especially working remotely, there's a lot of things that just take a lot more time. And we also discussed the fact that filming takes a lot more time because of all the new protocols that they have in place to do the actual
production. That's what I was thinking. I'm amazed that they're even doing production right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of bubbles that people have to be in. Not like everybody's in a bubble like Bubble Boy, but I mean, you know, pods. But they're actually in pod. Oh, never mind. It just takes a lot. It's complicated. It would take someone who understands what they're talking about to explain it, and that is not me.
Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing them in bubbles. That would be Strange New World.
Right. I'm getting Kurtzman on the phone right now. So hold on. We'll check on that. Well, I'm checking on that. Chuck, you have the next story.
You know it. You love it. Now you can try to beat it. It's COVID-19. No, I'm just kidding.
No. That's a no-win scenario.
Of course, we're talking about the other no-win scenario, the Kobayashi Maru simulation, better known as the no-win scenario. Scopely, the company behind the mobile game Star Trek Fleet Command, has just made the web game Star Trek Kobayashi Maru available for the low, low price of free. It's a classic, choice-based game with retro 1980s computer game graphics and dozens of mission variables. The player assumes the role of a Starfleet cadet facing this test of character for the first time, and then the second and third and fourth times. In fact, the odds of beating the Kobayashi Maru without cheating, James T. Kirk, are around 1 in... I should do that more in a Mr. Spock. The odds of beating the Kobayashi Maru without cheating are roughly 1 in 10,761.2. Right. Well, but persistence does have its rewards if you really want to play it 10,000 times. At least the three fastest players to find the hack and defeat the simulation, they will win prizes that include a CBS All Access lifetime subscription and
a
limited
prize, considering that it changes over to Paramount Plus in next month.
yeah, the lifetime is
good for a week.
March 4th. That's the clause they get out of that. Hey,
they get the prize on May 2nd or March 2nd. Wonderful.
Well, and they also get a limited edition Star Trek collectibles. If you want to try your hand at beating the game and at least earn bragging rights, we have a link to the game in the show notes for episode 86 over at the Topic is Trek CharlieX.com. Charlie X strongly suggested that each of you play the game. Okay? He pretty much threatened to wish us into the cornfield or something if we didn't try it. So go do it now. Okay, how'd they do? How'd they do, Craig?
Yeah, how did you do, and Kobayashi Maru, Craig?
The success wasn't my favor.
KobayashiMaru.com.
It was a good day to die.
Yeah, I think I played a grand total of 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
No, every single time. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get punchy after a while and you go, well, what happens if I do this thing, which is clearly going to get me killed? And guess what? It gets you killed.
Yeah.
Didn't you watch War Games? The best solution is not to play. Yeah, that's what I did.
I won by closing the browser tab.
I'll be interested to find out if we actually hear, not only do they get the 3 winners, but what is the cheat that actually gets you to the end? I mean, I'll go back and play it every once in a while in the meantime, but it's so random at a certain point that even if you win, unless you're recording it, you would never be able to do it twice because you have to go to all these different planets and there's different scenarios that which is supposed to interact with the different life forms and so forth. And it's very complicated.
You either reverse the polarity or you reprogram the isolinear chips. And don't you watch Star Trek?
It. I knew there was something like that.
All right. So, I try to reverse the polarity, Craig, take us away with the next story.
Okay. So don't shock yourself, Clinton. Many of us were hoping that Discovery's leap to the 32nd century would help us make sense of the events of the Short Treks episode, Calypso. As you may recall, in that story, we see that the USS Discovery has been abandoned for 1,000 years. The ship's computer has developed a robust personality and nurses a reluctant warrior back to health. Constantly dashing our speculations, season 3 did not deliver on all the pieces to connect to the series and the short, but don't give up hope. The show's producer says that more connections will be made as time goes along. Both Alex Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise have gone on record stating that Calypso is part of Discovery's story and that things will eventually lead there. Unfortunately, they did not specifically say how long we will have to wait. Until then, we'll just have to amuse ourselves with more Buster Keaton movies.
You have to wait 1,000 years.
That's right.
Yeah. You know what? I have a feeling when they wrap up Discovery, I have a feeling that that's where the show will end with the events of Calypso. That's
the guy will be boarding.
Yeah. The issue that people bring up with it is that the version of Discovery that we see in Calypso is the old Discovery. It's not A, and it doesn't have, you know, the independent nacelles or anything. It's
you're right.
So
kind of jumped over that, didn't they?
Yeah. So how does that all work out?
Time travel.
Time travel.
You slingshot around the sun.
Yeah. Well, the doctor shows up with the TARDIS and
and whales. For some reason, there's whales in there. I don't know why.
He brings a whale. I don't know. I just had a feeling. Well, I guess that's a good point. But I thought that I could envision where that would be where the series would finally end. But like I said, you got a good point with the things that we know now from Discovery 3. Maybe they put it all back together.
That's right. Well, you know, these things are not really working out. We keep losing the cells, you know, just kind of like, I thought you had it. We have to reattach.
Bolt that thing back on.
Yeah. You know, I was just watching Enterprise and, you know, one of the weird things before Enterprise, you didn't really see them referencing pop culture stuff from what would be their past. I know that they got a vast bigger world and some of it be watered down. You may not see some of that. And it, of course, a lot in the past and the future, you know, you're not going to see them talking about the Terminator movies or nothing, but they were watching movies in Discovery and Enterprise, they did that a lot more than I remembered. You know, they were having movie night and they were watching horror movies and stuff. And I thought that was really cool to see how they try to weave in some of our pop culture past to make it look like it belongs.
So were the ones on Enterprise Paramount properties? I'm wondering, is like cross promotion going on there?
Marvel Cinematic Universe.
In the Mission Impossible movie. No, I don't think they really referenced what movies they were. They were just like T'Pol was talking about. Was it an action movie?
And they were debating whether or not it was a Christmas movie or not. Yes.
Yeah. Die Hard, you know.
Were they all like Earth movies, or were they watching?
That's a good point. Well, they never really showed the movie. I mean, they were
right
in there watching the movie. Yeah, that would be interesting. Who made the Andorian flick?
I hate subtitles.
This is just those Gorn wedding home video things. I don't want this. What are we doing?
This Klingon Shakespeare sucks.
We're getting to that later in the show.
Oh, oops. Sorry. That's right.
All right. Well, nice segue here by Chuck into our next story.
That was the worst one yet.
I'm saying you've got to. I'm just segueing into the segue.
That was like put it on the pallet and push.
Hey, I already did the segue in the stories. What am I doing twice the work here?
Speaking of filling in the missing pieces in the Discovery timeline, yeah, he's the writer. A new Star Trek novel will attempt to do just that. Wonderlands by Una McCormick will tell the story of that year Michael Burnham spent waiting for the USS Discovery to appear in the 32nd century. She basically sat around and watched a bunch of old movies.
Ah.
Well, no, we don't know, but we're going to learn how she adapted to live day to day, looking for the answers to her myriad questions. The cover art also features Cleveland Booker, suggesting that we'll learn more about that budding relationship as well. And if the name Una McCormick sounds familiar, that's because she has penned more than a dozen Star Trek novels. That's pretty prolific. Her works include the recent works Star Trek Picard, The Last Best Hope, and the autobiography of Laura, the Lonely Goat. No, the autobiography of Catherine Janeway.
How can she author the auto? And it's very confusing.
Yeah. If then, it's all timey-wimey. Q must have been involved.
So I'm disappointed that one of the things, obviously, we will not learn out of this book is apparently nowhere in here will Cleveland Booker explain his name, because in season 3 of Discovery, he tells Burnham, I'll tell you how I came by that name when I get back from this other mission. So
what, Book?
Yeah. Well, no, Cleveland Booker.
Oh, yes, yes.
He was on The Family Guy, right?
No.
That's another Cleveland.
It's the Cleveland show.
That's the other Cleveland, Mr. Stamp.
Somehow I don't think that's where it came from, but right. I could be wrong because we don't know.
Yeah.
All right. And now we come back from Discovery. We go way back, all the way back to The Next Generation for our next story.
All right. So if you thought Okona was outrageous on Star Trek The Next Generation, wait till you see him in Star Trek Prodigy. If you're wondering, Okona, who's that? Actor Billy Campbell, who portrayed the Thadium Okona.
Okona. The outrageous Okona. Don't you remember that episode?
Yeah, I do remember that episode.
Say it right, spell it right.
Yeah. Different character altogether.
He was in the second season of TNG episode, The Outrageous Okona. And has been confirmed that he will be heading into the recording booth to be part of the upcoming episode on the Nickelodeon series. So speaking on the Comic Book Central podcast, Campbell said that the production is bringing back other legacy Trek characters. Very interesting. Though he declined to name names. He also
Cyrano Jones.
Fred Kirk.
Yeah, Chuck wants to see him back. He also gave a few hints as to what will happen in the episodes, saying that the show's female lead goes over the moon for him, much of the chagrin of the male lead. So we don't know the premiere date yet, but I'm sure it's in league with, you know, Picard and Strange New World. So
his name is Billy Campbell, and William Campbell played Trelane. So maybe they could bring back Trelane.
Maybe, maybe not. Don't know. yeah, hopefully we'll see Prodigy. I think I have been on record saying I think Prodigy will be the next one we actually will see, because that's been in production and we haven't had its first season airing yet. So I'm hoping that that one is.
Well, it's also animated, so we don't have to, you know, try and get all the actors together and have all the, you know, COVID stuff floating around.
And
so,
speaking of Prodigies, they could bring back Charlie X.
They could. They could.
I can't wait till Star Trek AOL comes back.
And Star Trek Genie. Star Trek CompuServe.
They're old people. They're old.
We prefer the name Seasoned.
Sorry.
Experienced.
Experienced. And I'm curious to see how this. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm interested to see how this turns out, because one, it's Nickelodeon, and so it's geared towards more kids. And
yes,
you know, so I'm curious the angle that they're going to spin on this. And
well, what I'm interested in as well is, this is a recent interview. Now, they've already greenlit season two of Prodigy. And I guess my question is he recording something for season one or season two?
Hmm.
I imagine they're still getting through one. I don't know. I'm just taking a guess there. It depends. I don't know.
Because it was back at, I believe it was a New York Comic Con, that they announced that Kate Mulgrew was back as Captain Janeway. And it sounds like she long since finished her recording.
Oh, her maybe.
This, so don't know. Don't know whether it's season one or season two.
I have a good feeling we'll be able to see this, because it's Nickelodeon and Paramount owns Nickelodeon, right?
Yes, I'm sure we'll be able to watch it on Paramount Plus.
All access, CBS.
Yeah, or with winning our free, you know, lifetime passes to CBS All Access.
Wait, Craig, we have that picture of us sitting on the CBS All Access stage. Is that now a collector's item?
Oh, yeah.
Next year, we'll have to get it on eBay. Next year, we'll put it on the Paramount Plus stage.
You get to climb the mountain to get to that stage.
Oh, please, no.
And finally, it's rumor time again.
Hmm.
I know, it's almost springtime for rumors. As much as we don't like to add fuel to this type of gossip, sometimes we need to acknowledge the gormagander in the room. This time, the buzz is that Jonathan Archer will be returning to Star Trek, possibly on Strange New Worlds. Yes, we know. How could that be possible? After all, Archer's adventures on the NX-01 Enterprise were 100 years before the time of Pike and Kirk. Would he be really old? Would he be a hologram? Has he been in suspended animation? Was there a wormhole involved? Transporter accident? Did Admiral Archer beam over from the Kelvin timeline to look for a new Porthos? Did we mention that it's just a rumor, people? We don't know anything about this. The only thing that fuels the speculation is the news that after 7 seasons, Scott Bakula's series NCIS New Orleans is closing up shop, and the last episode of that series will be on May 16th.
I wasn't aware of that part. Oh, okay.
So, but of course, as you know, it's a long road getting from the Big Easy to the Big E.
My brain, you mentioned Porthos, and my brain went to the TNG episode of the girl who could kill people with a touch, because she was the last of the Trelesta clan. Mm-hmm. Didn't she make that dish, Porthos a la Utah?
She was where Scotty sent him, I guess.
She was serving Riker one of her traditional dishes that she made for the Sovereign, and she called it Porthos. Maybe it was Parthos.
And hopefully so, because that's horrible.
Yeah, that's right.
And Riker said, Parthos a la Utah.
And then he followed up with,
I for one want to see some more Archer. I'd like to see him around somewhere.
The captain, not the cartoon Archer, right?
Right. Yeah, well, yeah. Watch that too. But after rewatching Enterprise, you know, I liked it a lot more than I thought I did, because I hadn't really revisited it much in a long time. I'd like to see them give a little more closure to everybody rather than, you know, Riker everybody being but Trip.
Everybody but poor Trip, because.
Well, yeah, I like Trip. Actually, Trip's one of my favorite characters on there. So, just saying.
And, but like I said, it's a rumor, and I really would have no idea what this would entail. I mean, even if we're talking about Strange New Worlds, somebody else said, well, it could be about Section 31, because we don't know what time period Giorgio is actually going back to, although I think we pretty well assume it's the same time as Strange New Worlds is set, because you probably also have, you know, Tyler and Laurel and so forth involved mm-hmm. in this. But
that would be really bizarre if she wound up in TNG timeline.
Indeed. She'd just be watching old episodes of TNG, and the green screen are in certain scenes, like in the Trouble with Tribbles episode.
Right.
Hopefully that's not a rumor. We're not starting that rumor. Believe me, not starting that rumor. Anyway, in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news, well, there's nothing specific to just Vulcan, but residents of Alberta were recently treated to a rather magnificent early morning show. It happened when a very bright meteor known as a fireball streaked across the sky above the province at 6:20 a.m. on February 22nd. We don't know the specific landing spot for the meteor, and perhaps it did touch down in Vulcan. We have links to some video that are mostly from security cams, because it was 6:20 in the morning that this happened. Yeah. But you can check that out. Just go over to the show notes for episode 86 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you can see the meteor for yourself. And they do
I'm over
have
there right now. Oh wait, we're doing a podcast.
Yeah. Don't not you. They do have some, I think radar or something where they kind of know roughly the area that it came down in, but they're not that sure. So I'm not sure if anybody's out looking for pieces of the meteor.
So a meteor comes down. This elderly couple finds this boy, really strong boy.
Yeah.
John and Martha Kent. They adopt this kid and raise them as their own. And
go on. I like where this is headed.
Yes. Yes. And,
this could be big.
He joins Starfleet. And
it's Canadian Superman.
Ah, the polite Superman. Yes.
He's got a big maple leaf on his chest.
I was just going to say that. That's his family crest. Yes.
We've been podcasting together too long.
All right. Well, in addition to all those stories, we have 58 stories that we didn't have time to cover. It's everything from information about a new Deep Space Nine illustrated handbook, which looks very nice, to a story about the actress who almost replaced Dr. Beverly Crusher. And no, we are not talking about Diana Muldaur's Dr. Pulaski.
So that's
check
good.
Out all those stories and find out what's what and who's who and where's where. But for right now, it's time to disconnect from subspace chatter. So goodbye, Charlie.
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Wait a minute.
I want to stay.
Okay, I know they started filming Picard, but I didn't think it was like filming it here during our show. That's just wrong.
Wow, Charlie sounds an awful lot like Patrick Stewart.
He does indeed. Where have I heard that clip before? Anyway, time to go out on our main mission. And we're going to do a little bit of a tag team here. I'm going to give you a little bit of information, and Chuck and Craig are going to talk a bit about the episodes, and we're going to talk about them all together at the same time.
Oh, kumbaya, my lord.
This is a bit like when you were a child and you had to eat all your Brussels sprouts and there were like two left on the plate. These are the last two Brussels sprouts on our plate, kids.
Yes, because we're talking about the last two episodes of the shortened second season of Star Trek, the animated series, specifically How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth and The Counterclock Incident. To give us a bit of background on the first, Craig will give us some lowdown.
All right. So How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth, written by Russell Bates and David Wise, directed by Bill Reed, and it first aired on October 5th, 1974. While retracing the path of a probe that approached Earth, the Enterprise is intercepted by a starship of a creature known as the Kukulon. The ancient winged serpent had long ago influenced civilizations such as the Mayans. The Mayas? Why did I put an N in there? the Mayas. Anyway, now, however, the being is angered that mankind has forgotten the lessons the
Ku Klux Klan.
This is gonna be
no.
What lessons did he teach?
Well, he taught and threatens to destroy humanity.
All right, some fun facts about this. Although script co-author Russell Bates pitched ideas about parasites to the animated series, Dorothy Fontana was more interested in getting from him a story based on the fact that he is Kiowa Native American. She said a story about the little men from the stars that Native Americans note in their legends. And the character of Walking Bear that's in the story was lifted right out of Bates' Parasite script that he tried to submit earlier to the animated series. One of the few notes that Gene Roddenberry gave about the original script was that his feeling that Kukulkan having a ship that looked just like himself was egotistical.
You think?
But since the script authors did want the imagery of the serpent in space, they suggested that the ship have a vaguely serpent shape on which Kukulkan's image could be projected. All right, so we're talking about how sharper than a serpent's tooth. And what are your thoughts? By the way, I'll let the audience in on a bit of trivia here. The three of us watched it as kind of a watch party together. So we've kind of discussed this one as it was happening in real time, but now we've cleared our heads. We know more about it now. So anybody want to throw in on their thoughts on how sharper than a serpent's tooth?
I thought it was terrific.
You sound like the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, one thing that we noticed was that, and we found out the backstory on this, everybody was in the recording booth to record their stuff except for William Shatner. He was someplace else and recorded his stuff at a different time. So the author of the story, Russell Bates, was able to guide them in pronunciation of Kukulkan.
That's
but
where
Shatner wasn't there, and he goes Kukulkan.
Cuckoo.
And says that consistently. So yes. Everyone else is pronouncing it a different way than Captain Kirk, and no one blinks an eye or mentions it at all. It's just very, very normal.
He was away on Orion.
Even I was pronouncing it differently.
I don't know. The story just kind of meandered to me that it didn't have a focus. We kind of had that same story about an ancient god influencing Earth and.
What does God need with a starship?
Exactly. In this one, he has a starship. He doesn't need one anymore. He's exactly got one, but.
And he goes from very angry to, oh my gosh, you released my animals. Okay, you're cool now.
Well, he's so powerful as well that he can't control the Capellan power cat. He just
powers
at the top of something.
He can control a starship and stop it dead in space, put it in an energy bubble. But, hey, you know, my animals get loose and, the game's over.
Yeah. What does God need with a starship?
Yeah, we also had weird
what
things.
What does this God need with a starship?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got wings. I mean, come on, what does he need? What is he doing with that? We have some of those weird things in the animation as well. One of them was that you have Walking Bear taking Sulu's position, of course, so that he's there to have the conversation with Kirk. But at one point he stands up. Well, we don't see him stand up. He's at the console. And the next shot, he's standing next to Kirk,
right next
to Kirk, conversation
with
Kirk.
Right.
Like who's steering? What sit back down again.
Get back in your seat, young man. This thing doesn't drive itself.
And we have Spock being rather short with Uhura. When they're concerned, when she's concerned about the captain, it basically says, get back to work. You know,
yeah.
We have that giant bubble in space that only can stretch in one dimension.
Of course. It just like dawns on Spock. Like, of course. Like, well, based on what? Where did this?
Hey, don't question
in one
his
unit
logic.
Of time as well. It can only go in one direction in one unit of time.
Yeah. One second? What unit of time are we talking? That was an interesting phrase.
It wasn't. Yeah.
We had a menagerie of characters that
literally
clearly the artist at that point had given up. We have one
with googly eyes.
One creature with just three eyes and just going around in circles.
One was pretty chill. He just scratched himself every once in a while.
And what else do you want me to do? I don't know. Just make his eyes wiggle around.
We had one that looked like a pickle with a hairpiece that just kept getting larger and smaller and larger and smaller.
Yeah.
Look at me, Morty.
Pickle Rick. An early Pickle Rick.
I'm Pickle Rick. I got hair.
And we had an Egyptian looking cat, a hairless cat that is unidentified at all. Just it's a cat.
We didn't see it in a cage. It was just walking around later.
That's right. So maybe it was Kukulkan's cat. I think he was let out of a, I think when the Capellan cat gets out, I think it does burst that, cat's cage. The cages are these glass enclosures, which apparently very easy to shatter because the cat just kind of runs around and
Capellans on Friday's Child?
I wasn't sure. I didn't get a chance to look that up. I do know that Capella also gets mentioned in the next episode that we'll be talking about, because that's where the flower that Dr. April has is from Capella, one of the worlds of Capella. Maybe not the same one, but so they had this thing going with Capella at that point. I don't know why. And you could clearly tell that this episode was influenced by Chariot of the Gods, because you have the ancient civilizations all referencing this creature from the sky. We have hints of Chinese culture and Mexican culture and Aztec culture and Native American culture, all these things mixed in together. And the Kukulkan is upset because they didn't recreate his vision exactly the way he gave it to them. So they didn't call him back. It's like, well, if it wasn't so complex,
yeah,
maybe you had a shot at it.
They want a shrubbery and then another shrubbery with a little path right down the middle. Yeah. All you got to tell them.
I don't know. This one, when we get to the rating on these, I just don't think we're going to be going very, very high on this one. But let's move on from that to our next, and by next, I mean last.
Oh, thank goodness. Episode. The other one would have been called penultimate, because that's just a fun word to say.
You know what? I can't wait to you two guys realize that there's a lost season.
No!
The animated series.
The other seven or eight in season two? Yeah.
That's I'm channeling right. An office meme right now. No, 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 no.
No. Yeah. No, 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 no.
I think we already did that video with Star Wars.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Did. The final episode is called The Counterclock Incident, written by John Culver, directed by, yes, once again, Bill Reed. The infamous Bill Reed at this point. It was first aired on October 12th, 1974, 1 week right after the one that Craig just did. Here's the synopsis of the show. The Enterprise is transporting two distinguished Starfleet officials, Commodore Robert April, the first captain of the USS Enterprise, and his wife, Dr. Sarah April, the first ship's chief medical officer. The Commodore is to be honored on Babel in recognition of his accomplishments upon his mandatory retirement at age 75.
Mandatory.
Babel. No, Sarika Vulcan. How do you vote? However, the ship is pulled into a supernova after it encounters an alien vessel traveling at warp. Get this. Warp 36.
That's pretty fast.
That's a lot of salamanders, I tell you. And it finds itself trapped in a reverse universe with time flowing backwards. The crew goes younger, losing knowledge of how to operate the ship. A tractor beam? How do I do that?
Yeah. What is this equipment?
That sounds pretty complex.
So the, a couple of fun facts about this episode. John Culver is listed as the writer of this episode, but that is actually a pseudonym for Fred Bronson. Bronson was the NBC publicist assigned to Star Trek, the animated series, and he felt some might think it inappropriate for an NBC employee to write for one of the network shows. Spoiler alert, no one actually minded. No one cared at all. Yeah. Robert April, of course, was the name Gene Roddenberry originally used for the name of the captain of the Enterprise in early drafts of The Cage. So Bronson checked the two-part Star Trek story, The Menagerie, carefully, making sure nothing in the episode suggested that there hadn't been another captain before Pike. The counterclock incident marks the last animated production of Star Trek for 45 years. The dry spell ended with the premieres of the Short Treks episodes The Girl Who Made the Stars and Ephraim and Dot in December of 2019. Now, I know we have thoughts about this one, lots of thoughts about what the heck was going on in this episode and everything from them going into the supernova. We've got this, these shots. I think this was the episode where suddenly Uhura is some white person just sitting in the chair.
Someone forgot to color the cell.
Very confusing.
You know, we had made a point to watch out for characters appearing where they weren't a moment ago.
Hard, folks, in the show, it's not hard.
or their
uniforms changing colors.
Yeah, their hair. And I just happened to notice that as the ship was shaking and they had an overhead view, I was like, who is that? They forgot to color Uhura. She's white. And then she's, of course, back to her normal skin color right after that. So I'm like, somebody didn't watch the show. So
yeah, Eric's playing tricks again on all of us, apparently. I think it was between this episode and the last one, because they're so easily confused with each other, that we have shots where we're doing a pan around the bridge and where Spock is sitting, suddenly there's somebody in a red shirt sitting there. And then at one point, McCoy and Spock are next to Kirk, and then it's just McCoy, and it just, sometimes they don't have their Delta shields on, and sometimes they don't have braids, or they do have braids when they're not supposed to have braids. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Yeah. Well, the whole series is a mess.
But we, not only do we have this other ship that travels at warp 36, but the Enterprise tries to stop the ship from heading directly into the supernova because they're trying to be, you know, trying to be nice, save the ship. So they put their tractor beam on the ship.
Yeah, I try capturing something going warp 36 as it goes by.
Yeah, it's like if you blink and it's like, how far away could it possibly be? But apparently they get it.
Here's NASA. Good. Hey, let's grab this asteroid as it flies by Earth.
It was a lucky shot. I got it. And then they get kind of yanked up to what, warp 20 something?
Yeah, they're going pretty darn fast, and none of them turn into salamanders. Nope. So maybe that animation was just too expensive to do. So they really were salamanders, but we couldn't tell.
And I love how they're in this reverse universe where all the background is white and all the stars are dark. But yet when they look at the view screen, it's either off or someone forgot to animate that too.
Yeah. Or the ship's literally flying backwards.
Stock footage. Yeah, the ship's going backwards was a little bizarre.
Yeah.
And don't even get me started on how your father is a child and your son is an old man and where you came from. And I don't even want to picture that.
So let's talk about this whole reversal thing where your child is older than you and your dad is in the playpen. It's a very, very, very intriguing.
Well, I love that episode of Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Not even close to this level of grotesque.
Well, right. It does. There's bizarreness going on here in that you have to construct this. You're on this premise that it's reverse and the stars are negative. So you've got white space with black stars, but aside from space itself, nothing else is negative. Like
right. The they're not walking backwards.
They're not walking backwards. Now, they could be, well, they could be talking backwards, but Spock says that they can understand them because their brains are apparently being rewired to understand the reverse language.
Okay.
So that much they address. That's I think that's the one thing they do address.
They have,
is how they're able to talk to them.
They have a map of the galaxy. And apparently Earth and this supernova are on practically opposite sides of the galaxy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did anybody watch Voyager? 70,000 years to get across one quadrant? Oh, wait, they were going warp 36. That's right.
Oh, that's it.
Right. Well, even if you take into account that they didn't say that they were on whatever Terra is backwards, because that was the name of the planet.
Etra.
That they didn't say they were, I don't think they said they were there. I think they were just going back to some ship. So they theoretically were not there, but that still means that the Enterprise
was across the galaxy.
Yeah.
Not happening.
And had to get back. Well, maybe you say, all right, the reason they get back is because they use that ship to pull them through the supernova that they create. And maybe they get slung shut back through traveling at this intense rate of speed. And by the time they slow down, I'm trying to make the best of it here that they are most of the way back through the galaxy.
Without the Borg noticing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how could they? They're going at warp 36.
The Borg went, we got to get us some of that.
Right.
Follow that starship. Oh, too late. Yeah, we see, as referenced in the show title, we get to see Enterprise babies. We get to see what Kirk looks like as a child and Uhura and Sulu and Spock. But most interesting of all to us, of course, is what does Eryx look like as a child? And he's sucking his thumb and he's so many to choose from. So how does he decide? Exactly. And they did make him look younger as they're regressing everyone else.
His snout was getting shorter.
Right. So all his features were getting less angular, just like everybody else's. So they did actually spend the time to make new cells for this episode. I think that's something to point
finally
out. Now that we are at the end, they just said, what the heck? Let's make some new cells that we can always reuse anything.
So they used
45 years.
They used the transporter to bring them back to their original form. But how did they get all the memories?
Yeah, it brings into question, what exactly is in that pattern buffer?
Uh-huh.
I mean, theoretically, it needs to have all that, right? I mean,
let's talk to Thomas Riker.
It stores all your memory engrams? That seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah, but if you're deconstructed here and reassembled there, and it doesn't bring that stuff with it, how do you have it still?
We're still working on that.
Brain. I'm getting hurting brain.
Still working on that.
That was not addressed in the episode either. Oddly enough, they didn't get into that philosophical question. They did get into the philosophical question, however, though. We now have a younger Captain April and Dr. April.
And should they stay young and relive that part of their lives over again?
And they choose not to, because they had no regrets about the lives that they lived. And so...
Well, they obviously didn't do anything fun.
They obviously didn't have a stock portfolio that needed to mature some more.
Right. Wait, let's go back. I got some mistakes I like to erase. By Google.
But he does find out that by the time that this is all done, that they're reconsidering, this idea that he has to retire at 75. And we're all thinking, by this century, 75 is the retirement age mandatory?
Was the gem blinking in his palm of his hand?
I guess
it was time to go.
I understand that you're in the 60s and you're talking about projecting into the future, but I have to think in the 70s, right? In this case, I think even in the 70s that you're you want to push it a bit further than 75 years old.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't say he was going to die. They were just retiring him from Starfleet.
No, but they said mandatory, like, you know, that you have to retire at 75.
Yep.
Like, that's
no choice.
You're done.
All right. Line up for the phaser firing squad.
No, you're just retiring. You're not getting.
Oh, I thought they said refiring. Oh, sorry. Oh, let's we've lost so many people by mistake. Sorry.
Put him out to pasture.
However, it was interesting to reuse that name. And now that name has become canon because there have been other references to Robert April on screen.
Discovery.
When Saru was asking for, I keep hitting this, when Saru was asking for the names of the most decorated officers in Starfleet, the first name on the list is Robert April.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another reason that clearly the animated series is too tied into canon to say, nope, it's not canon.
Woohoo! Kukla Khan is canon.
That's right. That's right.
So yeah,
but all the things that are canon, the Enterprise has gone 22, Warp 22.
Yeah, reboot that episode as a feature film.
Yeah.
Bem sings Patsy Cline. I fall to pieces.
Yeah.
And pull myself together again. All right. So now it's, any other thoughts on these fine, fine two episodes?
Yes, I have some thoughts.
Okay.
I'm glad we're done.
We are indeed done.
Me too. I'm running out of beer.
Yeah. Next time around, we'll be going back to reviewing the movies.
Did we decide whether we're on six or not?
No, we'll figure that out later. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of that.
Yeah.
At some point. But before we do anything else, we have to rate these two episodes. So we're going to rate How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth on a scale of 1 to 10 Capellan Power Cats.
Boy.
And I will start. I'm going to rate this episode a whopping 3 Capellan Power Cats. I just felt like it was going in all sorts of directions. The only credit that I give it is that they actually had some new animation in it. That's about its only selling point. You have a an interesting looking creature in Kukla Khan. You have ridiculous looking creatures in those cases. And you have a new character. I would have liked to have actually had the character of Walking Bear introduced much earlier in the series and have that as a recurring character. I thought that would be interesting. So I give it a little bit of credit for doing a couple things, but that's about as far as I can go. I'll go next to Chuck.
I'm going to go with 3.5. I thought there was just a little more. I'm with you on all those points. The ridiculous creatures, the whole thing. I did like the fact that they were including a little more diversity with Walking Bear and some of the cultural references. So that's about its only saving grace. It gets another 0.5 out of me.
Okay. And Craig, what say you?
I think they owe me some points.
Now there's a new one.
Yeah. I think they owe me some points here. I think we're all in league here. I agree with all three of you guys. I would say probably a 3. This is really my least favorite episode, to be honest with you. Well, second to the last.
Wait, there's one more.
Yeah, honestly.
We've got one more to go here. So we're going to rate the counterclock incident on a scale of 1 to 10 Capellan power flowers.
Flowers? Okay.
All right. So we'll go in reverse order and we'll start then with Craig.
I'll probably give like a 4, but that's barely. So I was going to say a 4.
Okay.
I'm not going to justify it with any sentence or anything. That's just a 4.
Just trying to get through it as quickly as I can.
Let's move along.
All right, Chuck, what say you?
I'm going to rate this with the other guy from the other cartoon. Oh, boy, where to begin? You know, I do like the introduction of April and his wife. And, you know, there were some interesting points in here. I think it had a bit of saving grace. So I think I'm going to go with Craig, about a 4 on This Feels Right. It just, there was still enough of that WTF moments in this show. Like, what just happened and where did they pull this out of? And it's clear, backwards? It's clear, and it really makes me appreciate that we have people like Dr. Aaron McDonald doing technical research these days, so we don't repeat the sins of the past with lack of science. And this one clearly fell into that lack of science motif.
Yeah, I think we should have Dr. Aaron back on saying, first watch this episode and then let's discuss.
Oh, right. Oh yes. Try and science your way out of this.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm going to rate this 3.5 Capellan Power Flowers. Oh, man. I feel that there were so many issues with this that didn't make sense. And I also agree that I think it's saving grace. Well, it has two saving graces to me. One is that we get to see a young Eric's. And second, that we get the introduction of Captain and Dr. April that now are able to actually have their place in the canon of Star Trek, which I think is pretty cool. But that doesn't make up everything for all the other silliness that goes on in this episode. Just have the ship go fast. It doesn't have to go 36.
Warp 36.
Doesn't.
But you could even say it's off the scale. You know, just leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah. Going, woo, it's going wicked fast. Ludicrous speed.
How many Cochran's is that? Say,
exactly, Eric. If you just said, how fast is it going, Eric? And that was the response.
Yeah.
We would have understood. Any last thoughts at all on Star Trek, the animated series?
Only that I think the season one, I think was better than the second season for sure. And there was some really cool stuff in season one, but season two was just all over the place.
We were so eager to have Star Trek back then that we thought this was acceptable.
Yeah.
Just like the Star Wars holiday special.
Yep. It's something. Yeah, it's something. All right. It's something. All right. Well, if you have any additional thoughts out there on the animated series, you may have super enjoyed the entire series and thought we were way off base on it. Well, you can let us know what you think about Star Trek.
It was entertaining, but not for the reasons you think it should have been.
Exactly.
Right.
All right. And we are about to go on our warp speed roundtable, so we need an appropriate sound effect for that. Okay, excellent. Last time around, we asked which episode of Star Trek from any series you like would you like to make disappear forever? And we have received some additional replies in addition to our own, which we gave last time around. So first of all, listener Diane said that to delete, erase, and kaput the TOS episode and the Children Shall Lead.
That would be my wife's nomination as well. She cannot stand that episode.
Oh, yeah. I think you've said that before, yeah.
So we have two votes. Two votes for that one. Gary Lindros said Code of Honor from TNG, which I think a lot of people would agree with, pointing out that the jungle gym is unforgivable. There's a lot of things in that episode are a bit unforgivable.
True.
And Tim Callender would like to vanish the Enterprise episode Unexpected, saying the whole episode is offensive on so many levels. And if you've forgotten what that one is about, Trip gets pregnant.
He starts, there was a couple of funny things in there. He's like, what's that smell? You know, he starts, his senses are heightened because he's pregnant.
I don't even want to think about how he gives birth. That's my next series to watch as soon as I get through Voyager.
So. Well, you might want to skip Unexpected.
Oh, no. That's like skipping Threshold. You have to go through that again.
Have to work through that and move beyond. All right, but this time around, we're going to go a little bit more fun on this one and say, what else besides Shakespeare is best experienced in the original Klingon? So this is just a silly one, folks, just letting you know up front. I've got some thoughts on this one. I will throw out my first one because I wrote down a couple, and then I'll see who else wants to chime in. My first one is, I'm going to go with the one I like least first. I'm going to say soap operas. They're best for, because in Klingon, they make the villains actually use the soap, and that's just horrific for them. All right, but let me go. Who wants to chime in next with one?
I'll go.
Huh?
Origami. Have you ever seen original Klingon origami? It is, yes, to behold. They can fold that paper into a little batleth that looks beautiful.
And it's sharp, too.
Yeah, yes, down. You can kill someone with it.
That's right. Put an eye out, kid. I would say the classic rap music. I want to see a Klingon version of I Like Big Butts from Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
I also said that Cats, the musical in the original Klingon, because it's a cautionary tale about how... But what happens?
A cautionary tale.
Yeah, when tribbles are allowed to evolve, that's what happens to them. They turn into those mean cats. Don't want that.
No.
Klingon podcasting.
Ooh.
Oh, now you're stepping on our toes, Chuck.
<I'll> subscribe.
I'm not just crossing the streams. I am just putting them together into one big ugly stream.
But you'd have to rename your book if you're trying to sell it to the podcasting for the glory of the Klingon Empire.
Kapla!
How about if they, you know, in the original Klingon, I would like to see them reenact ancient Earth sitcoms.
The Wizard of Oz in its original Klingon. Toto is a targ.
And yet it still pairs well with Dark Side of the Moon. It's really weird.
Yeah, he started the right
Dorothy,
time.
Dorothy, now picture Laurel.
Oh, boy.
Well, along that line, I say that, you know, you want to experience the Stephen King novels in their original Klingon because they're the funniest things this side of Rurapente. They're just hilarious.
Here's Johnny. Wait, did Stephen King do that one? Trying to remember. I might not have the right reference.
Yeah. No, you did. You
the
did.
Shining. Oh. That's right.
Okay. My brain is just... after going through two animated series...
Yeah, I was going to say...
There's a few dead brain cells up there.
A few.
All right. Does anyone have anything else to share? If not, we're about to refill the Dillon Chambers. You got something else?
Star Trek in the original Klingon.
Nobody wants to see that. There's subtitles involved, and yeah.
That's right.
I think if one thing season one of Discovery taught us is that people do not read subtitles when Klingon is spoken.
Well, either that or Kim was watching some show, I can't remember if it was on Netflix or something, but it was overdubbed. So it wasn't subtitled, it was overdubbed. So their lips don't quite match up with what they're saying. So I can see like a classic TOS episode where, you know, Kirk's overdubbed with some Klingon.
I might watch that. I might watch that.
How about the Bible in Klingon?
Whether even the writer's Bible. I don't know any of those things.
Podcasting for Dummies in the original Klingon.
Yeah. If you have some ideas about what you think is best experienced in the original Klingon, be sure to let us know. But right now, I'm going to attempt to no longer in secret, out in the open here, because we have plenty of it, refill the dead lithium chamber, because we're about to warp on out of here.
Oh, 1 second before you take off.
I got to pull it back out again and put it over in the case. And yeah. It involves that whole arm and the thing.
Yeah, you got to have that stasis box that holds it in. Yeah, the anti-grav. What do they call that?
All right, fine. What do you got?
I was just going to say that if you want to listen to us watch the last two episodes, we did record ourselves drinking heavily as we watched the last two episodes. So that will be coming out after this episode. So you'll be able to listen to us cackle and laugh at the last two episodes. The watch party.
Yes, we decided to share our pain on that one. All right. Well, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and MeWe and that set of curtains you've always meant to put up and just haven't gotten around to doing, and it's just sitting in the closet. And so please get to it before the next show. Otherwise, I'm going to call you out on it. And who speaks for you guys?
Go ahead, Joe.
You can find us just by searching the internet for Technorama Podcast. That'll take you to our homepage. That'll take you to our Facebook page. That'll take you to our YouTube channel. It's out there. It has been for, coming up on 16 years.
Yeah.
If you haven't found it yet, if you just search for Technorama, you might end up at the Swiss Science Institute of the same name. So make sure it's Technorama Podcast. Then you can't miss. Unless you type something like podcast wrong, but
or they put out a podcast as well, in which case
then we're suing.
Actually, if you search for Technorama on Google, we're the fourth.
We used to be second. Get back to work, Craig.
We were first at one point, and then the Swiss Science Center got their SEO stuff going on.
Oh, man. They're the worst.
I used to use SEO Unix.
No, SEO, not SCO.
Okay.
That's a different show altogether.
And on that note, let's get out of here.
All right. So hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it. And subscribe, please, so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek,
don't
put on the red shirt.
It changes colors. Like in the animated series, you know.
You'll warp 36. Whoosh.